very, very, very warm and very happy. And they invited me to stay with them in New Jersey in their home. And it was a very happy relationship. I was then divorced, and...
Now, did you live alone for these 10 years?
Then, alone. No, 5 years.
5 years in New York.
Five years in New York. And then, I think financially, the director of the Midtown Gallery said, you better take the job. And the job was an artist in residence at Pennsylvania College for Women, which is PCW, as I call it, PCW, in Pittsburgh, now called Chatham. And he said, you can't, the business is not good for you. I mean, this was always, I was very famous, and I got more publicity than any other artist. Now, I still have, you know, I got many, many cover stories in Time magazine and Inside, because again, for the first time, I befriended this man, Alexander Elliot, with whom I'm friendly now, and I deal with him now, and he's going to have an article in a new magazine that is not in existence for a long time, very beautiful magazine. But there's some other stuff we're going to work on. He really discovered me, and I must say that I owe him all my fame, because once I had the article, I had the level to get people posted, because I showed them, you know, and what I did. But that was before I did the covers, long before I did the covers. I mean, long, it's just a few years, but it seems, certain times seems short, certain times seems long.
So now, when you came, when exactly did you come to Pittsburgh to be the artist?
1952.
1952.
So I came here, and lived in a hotel downtown. When Anderson heard that I lived in a hotel, he was so much ashamed. He got me out of this hotel. It was called the Hotel Edison, a really flea-bitten hotel. And he got me into Chatham, and I met the Greens, who became tremendous good friends and are still good friends to me. She worked at Home Economics at the Gateway House. And immediately I established my way of working with the pen, and I was very dogmatic. I wanted the girls to have the pen that I want to use. I wanted them to have a tripod. I wanted to have white paper. I wanted only black and white drawing on a white piece of paper. Today, I don't care what they do. I've become a much greater teacher. You know, I really get out of you, not what I can teach you, but what you are. You understand? I can make you the best of what you are on your level. Because immediately I see, you write this way. Well, why don't you write more this way? I like this better. Slanted, yes, that's very, very good. And I know what they can do, and I push it. At that time, it was very dogmatic, but still, I did the most beautiful drawings out of the girl. And then I met her in the music department, you know, at Chatham, and she was playing a violin. I needed girls playing instruments. So this I didn't do for you, but there is somebody who is interesting. No, they didn't do this for you. This just happens, you know, it's a coincidence that somebody is interested to get some watercolors for his music room. And so I painted all these paintings. I mean, this is just a tiny part of what I did at the college, but I was always interested, as I'm interested today, in the relationship between the instrument and the man, you know, in the self-preoccupation, in the love of playing with this instrument, which you are in love with. So I play, she's at the, this middle girl, she's a nun, she, right after she finished the one with the cello. Mm-hmm. And she completely retreated from life. And this girl was a very pretty girl. She was a waitress, and she played the flute. Or maybe she didn't play the flute. Maybe, I mean, it's not the flute, it's the oboe or something. And I said to her, just hold it. It doesn't matter if you play it or not. And then there's a girl by the name English, and a little girl. That was before I was married, because always people say that crap, that marriage changed my... That's a lot of shit. I mean, I already had changed a year or half a year before I got married into this new way of painting, which was from the Renaissance way of looking at reality, where man is a solely creation in front of the universe, to the both consciousness that man is a phenomenon of creation, but at the same time he becomes a phenomenon of evolution. This two contradicted was perfectly feasible for me, because in other words, you from far you see what it is, you come close, it disappears into non-objectivity. This I had found out through the watercolors. That's why you come here at the pregnant moment. Because here, not enough can I show you the era of my investigation into Pennsylvania, into Pittsburgh, into women's college, into a prospective mate for life, or for a part of life. I don't want to be that prophetic. So, and the investigation into the instrument and a preoccupation that I over and over again relived. Then later on, I made drawings for the opening of the Lincoln Center in New York, which is called now the Fisher Hall, Avery Fisher Hall. I did the opening brochure for them. And then I did a book for Sir Roy and Tracy's Tiger, and then I did the drawings for the CBS yearbook, where I traveled in the whole country. In other words, what you see here in this catalog is something that I do from time to time, and at the same time, it teaches me to draw, you understand? Because I don't, like any artist, does make one drawing, 10 drawings. I do hundreds of drawings when I work from morning until night. You know, nobody can keep up with me. I go, you just tell me where you go and what you want and don't leave me alone. And then I go and investigate this whole building. Like in California, you have this huge CBS building that goes for blocks and blocks. And I go from one place to the other and I see people sewing, you know, putting on uniform, or somebody listening, or a prop department. There's thousands of possibilities. In other words, always worlds. This is a world, the existentialistic world of Germany was a complete perfect world where the veneer was taken off. But to come back to the comparison between the humor that was left in the bombed London to the tragedy and the morbidness and the horribleness of Germany after the war. There was no fun whatsoever. It was absolutely stark, stark tragic. It was absolutely unbelievable. So to come back to Vienna, when I saw then Vienna, it wasn't so terrible, but for me it was one of the most glorious days in my life to walk. So in a week, I was there only a week, I walked all the walks that we had walked as children that pre-laid the foundations of bringing my family there in 1957 for the first time, the little girl and us, to go back to Vienna after just because his other sponsor towards Life magazine, whom I called up and I said, I want to do this investigation, I want to go, remember I mentioned this, I want to go back and do something.
So when you got there.
And they said, we don't want to pay you. I said, the hell with you, I'm going to pay for it myself. And went over there and brought back the first paintings and drawings from Vienna. And from since then, which was a vacation, it has become more and more important. My going back to my childhood and having been now an American, seeing in a microcosm of Vienna, seeing the behavior of human beings. When I say seeing the behavior, it implies conscious consideration of behavior, which is not true at all, because when I come to Vienna, I get a spark comes again, and I have great ideas like this painting, or this painting, or the Pitts painting, or this painting, or these paintings. They are not American, they're not European, they're somewhere else in a different realm. You understand? Which in 100 of years, when the world becomes even more universal, and it's already pre-seen in Ingmar Bergman and Fellini, where you even before that in Renoir at All Quiet on the Western Front and The Grand Illusion. I don't know if you remember the movie The Grand Illusion, which it was done after the first World War, in the time between the First World War and Hitler. Time, but this kind of international, all world is one piece, which is then manifested by the flyers to the moon, who saw the earth, and this is the meaning of the Icarus, you know, where you want to fly, and you fly to the moon, and there's nothing there, it's just a garbage, a dusty garbage ball. So you love the earth even more than you loved it before.
Tell us some more about now you're settling into Pittsburgh and how you felt about Pittsburgh and how you...
First of all, I had come here through Pittsburgh very often because I went skiing to Aspen with a friend of mine whom I didn't mention yet, who was another one of this group of Jewish... there was two groups in Vienna. One was the political group, which was the Marxistic, Communistic, Socialistic group, and the other group to which I belonged was the Boy Scout groups. You understand? And with this Boy Scout group, I was very, very close because they were helpful of getting out of Austria, for instance, when I was still a boy, and going to a camp, maybe in Yugoslavia, and then leaving the camp and going on my hitchhiking trip. You understand? So they were very helpful. And this group of people, I still get together. One of them is this man in London, and one is a friend in California, with whom I was supposed to meet in 1951 or 50. It was somewhere in the middle of the country to go skiing, and he said the middle of the country is Colorado, so we met there. Little did I find out that it wasn't the middle of the country. But anyway, I had come through Pittsburgh and I immediately fell in love with it. That was the maestro. Because when I looked out of the bus and I saw these hills full of houses and I saw the rivers and bridges, and you come up over there, I don't think there was a turnpike yet, believe it or not. There was no turnpike yet in 1952. We came in over there, and then we came over a bridge, and we came, do you realize where we came out? On Craig Street on Baum Boulevard. And I saw this apparition. There was a bottle turning with glasses, whiskey, Shenley or some whiskey turning. And it was from Baum Boulevard, that's right. And I was fascinated. So when this man said, you better take the job, I was all set because I loved the city. I was finished with New York. I had done Coney Island and Manhattan Beach and and Plum Beach and Reese Park and the bridges and sand and the ocean and everything. And I was in Coney Island most of all. I was finished with this world. I was ready for a different world. So I came to, first I went to California. Then I came back to Pittsburgh. I started my teaching in September. I met Joni in the summer. We married. 1953. Mm-hmm. The next year, we had the first child. 4 years later, we had the second child. The first child was the girl, Stephanie. And again, there was... Now, I've talked about the home life, and when I think back how... You can't say, but one thing, I don't know if you have this in your existence, that you, not retreat, you you go back to a different regress. You regress to a different state of being, you know.
When you have a family.
Yes, it was an absolute regression. And I was very happy with the nucleus that I had created of having the baby to pose for me and having these new ideas and pregnancy and all this new ideas. Mm-hmm. And at that time I drew already, painted Pittsburgh, but I had no idea that 1953, 54, 55, 56, then it came into my mind to go back to work, because I got closer and closer to Time Magazine, and I called Life Magazine, as I told you, to go back. And Joni's parents are from Escanaba, so we went to Escanaba, and they had the Escanaba, Michigan, that's upper Michigan, that's after the Straits of Mackinac, going to the left. And but you asked me before why Pittsburgh. I have traveled in America from coast to coast. From later on in 1956, there was something simultaneously. First of all, I got my first assignment for Time Magazine to do Julie Harris. So all of a sudden money came in. And not yet. More freedom to go to Europe and to have some sort of future possibilities of making money. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to tell you yet, because my final verbal agreement came a year later when I was fed up with teaching. As I called Time Magazine and I said to them, could I get enough covers? Otto Fürbinger was the main editor, and I was very friendly with him. All this all happened through Alexander Elliot, because he said, well, why don't you get Kerner doing a cover for the magazine? And I always knew I can't do it. I can't face a person. At the same time, you must realize it's a tremendous responsibility to face a person and to do come through with a great portrait at that moment, because I said, only people who pose for me, I will paint.
Mm-hmm. You
can do it from a photograph or any other. Oh, I said that I will not do only on the... He said to me, how many covers do you want? I can give you as many covers as you want. I said, I don't need many covers. Give me 5 to 6 covers a year. That's plenty. That is all I can do. That I can live from, and from the expense money that I get. They were just... When you compare them with any man, they were just absolutely magnificent. Magnificent. Wait a second. Teaching, after we had come back from Europe, the security lied in 1 year teaching at Utica. And again, I got beautiful paintings out of that time. Beautiful.
So you left Pittsburgh for a year.
Yes, yes. And then I came back, and I had the agreement with Time Magazine, and they lived happy ever after. Da-da-da, 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 da-da. But it didn't last until Henry Grunewald, who is also Viennese. Henry Anatole, which is a great, beautiful name. Anatole, isn't that a beautiful name? Henry Anatole Grunewald, also Viennese, one of my greatest supporters, one of my greatest friends, who fired me immediately when he got and swept into power. I always tell this to my students, that you never trust your closest friend. Never, never. Like this guy, the father of the son, who tells the son, crawl up to the monkey bars, and then he says, now jump. And the boy jumps, he pulls it, and it crashes down on the ground, said, don't even trust your own father. So, this great trauma happened, I think, in 1966, but I was warned by Alexander Elliot that I should not put all my cards on the covers. But I was happy because I had complete freedom. The artist envied me. He makes money. The other artists, if you tell them, okay, here's money, you don't have to teach, you have to do nothing. Go ahead, create. They can't do anything. So with me, it doesn't matter if I have something to do, if nothing to do, if I get money or no money, it's always the most important thing is to get. That's what I'm telling you. It's always, I knew from the beginning, you are in a stage, that's all right, no, that's all right, where you don't know exactly if you're on the right track, and if you don't think you're on the right track, it's just shivering. But it's not important what you want, it's important what you don't want. But fortunately, in my decision of being too small and having too much problems with my voice and being not such a great musician, I early decided of not becoming, I could have become, I had a great voice like Caruso. Absolutely one of the greatest voices you can imagine. No teaching, nothing, but one of the greatest tenors you can imagine. But I knew that is not, you know, I had the decision, this is not for me. I will become a graphic artist. Not like Andy does on a more becoming a concert, but something very pedestrian. Just a plain, simple commercial artist. Little did I know, for me, this I didn't mention, for me, the great ones were unobtainable. They were up in the glories. Beethoven, Bruegel, and Goethe, and Shakespeare, and all the great ones were beyond they were absolutely, I always point out to the student, if you don't realize what greatness is, you will never become great. And if you have this terrible fear and know what greatness is, then there's a possibility that you become great. But I immediately knew that these people are not normal people. You understand that? And nobody can count and talk it down, that they are not normal people in the way we consider people. They are absolutely abnormal. They have a direct line to God. And they get all their inspiration, like woman gets pregnant, so they get pregnant and have the invention. That's my point that I make in of course it's uncomfortable to be pregnant, there's nothing heroic about it, but there's nothing heroic about it creating. Why does woman be so jealous of the creative man? There's nothing heroic about it. There's nothing so great about it. It's simple, it's pedestrian, it's nothingness. to be great. It's absolutely nothing. At the same time, it's everything. You understand that? It's mystical. It's supernatural. The same as birth, there's nothing natural about being pregnant. There's nothing natural. As I talked to a person who is a doctor, he said the sperm should be immediately rejected by the cell of the woman. Why in this case is it accepted? When the doctors work over and over again to implant a foreign cell into a foreign body. Why should this? That is a miracle. With other words, life is a miracle. Genius is a miracle. Pregnancy is a miracle.
During this very happy period, your philosophy is fantastic.
But you must realize that I get more and more brilliant as time goes on, because one thing is my paintings become more brilliant. Now come back to the imagery that I painted when we had the first child. When I think back on the imagery, how close and how naive my world was, that it just gives me the shivers. I did good paintings, but my whole scope is like being in a prison, you understand? And now I'm a free man, and I have ideas. I don't have the panicky of producing. It comes easy to me. I go come back and bring this painting back and bring maybe dozens of watercolors back. And as I'm there, I have an idea for next year, and I have an idea for summer. You understand? It is just absolutely, the more you create, the more you, that's the reason why you should, I think you should stick and go through and do the acrobatics of the exercises, because there's nothing else. What else would you do? What else do you want to do in life? Is there anything else? I want to ask you something. Is there anything else in life you really want to do, or you would like to do?
Well, the problem. The problem I came with the guitar is that I was wondering if there is a. I came to this point, I was very upset with some of the sort of, okay. Or you were
interested.
But I got to this point where I realized that I can't really make a permanent state. We're talking about being remembered. Maybe it's being afraid of death, I'm not sure.
That is the same. I don't care to be famous or great or be remembered. This is the best I want to do at that moment. It doesn't matter what the consequences are.
But then what was the motivation in your competitiveness that you admitted that you had very strongly? This desire to compete and to get that acclaim.
I illustrated to you the years of 1944. And I was much, much older than Andy. I was nothing. I was just the beginning. I didn't know that I'm going to be a famous artist one day. But I had this direction. This is what I wanted to do. I mean, I don't know if you really want to do it.
One doesn't always know yourself. Can I ask you something about because we have a certain amount that we would like to try to get from you, and you've given us a lot of interesting philosophy, a lot of interesting information up to this point. I'm just curious, just for an aside, as to what kind of a home world you found yourself creating at the same time
in the home world.
The environment. For your children and your family, you say it was happy, you were getting the commissions.
Now, that's very, very important, what you just asked me. Maybe I'm dictatorial. I wrote this back, the last letter I wrote from Vienna. Maybe I was dictatorial of this, to decide of what is right. By dictatorial, I mean that I decided everything, you know. I decided to go to Vienna, but James Joyce says, if you would come to me, what would you give me? You know, because he says, If you want to get, you have to come to me. I cannot come to you, because if I would come to you, what would you give me? Nothing. So there was always the question, somebody has to be the leader. And I know that I was right, because this made our life great, enjoyable, livable. We lived in Europe, we lived in America, we have our financial problems, but there was always an income, especially at the time of the Time magazine, where we didn't have to worry too much after the severance with the teaching income, and only depending on the on Time magazine. And that's the reason why I was so envied, and I had a sheltered life in the shadow of getting five covers. Sometimes I even got a double cover. And it was interesting, again, duofold, the money, the portrait, and the worlds that I met. Because I met worlds that I would never come in my whole life together. How many people meet Rockefeller and Bernstein and the surgeons and philosophers? And I saw their world, and I, in each case, I invented a close, dramatic stage setting into which I posed them, you understand?